Is the agenda item is the flag salute, and Boy Scout Troop 26 is here this evening to lead us in the flag salute. If you would remain standing for our invocation, Pastor Jerry Nelson is here from Seventh-day Adventist Church here in Arroyo Grande to lead us in the invocation as well.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I invite you to bow your heads. Our Father in heaven, we want to thank you and recognize you tonight. We thank you for this wonderful country that we live in, for the privilege that we have of being involved in the political process like we are tonight. We thank you for the privilege that we had today to vote. And we just thank you for this beautiful area that we live in. What a privilege it is. We ask that you would guide the hearts and minds of all those who are making decisions tonight. And we pray that each decision would be in harmony with your will. For we pray this in your name. Amen.
And in 2 weeks, we're going on a activity to the lake, and we're going to fish. It's going to be fun. And over the summer, we went to National Jamboree, and that was real fun. And this summer, we're going to Northern Tier, which is in Minnesota, and it's a canoe trip into Canada also. So, yeah.
Okay, very good.
As he said, last summer, we went to National Jamboree, and we had a lot of fun, and we got to see a lot of neat places there. And then, as he also said, we're going to Canada and going canoeing and over lots of lakes, canoeing and backpacking. And that should be a lot of fun as well. And recently we were just winding down our popcorn sales, our fundraiser, helping us go to all these different camps. And yeah, that was fun too.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, I am the assistant senior patrol leader. I'm his assistant. And pretty much, yeah, we've been doing a lot of activities. We've been all over the country doing stuff. And we're going to go backpacking, canoeing, and summer in Canada. So
let me get this straight. You're going fishing. You're going canoeing in Canada. And you've been across the country in various activities that are largely fun kind of things, right? So my question is, do you need any more adult supervision to accompany you on these things?
None
at all? Okay. Just thought I'd try. Well, thank you for being here, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure to have Troop 26 here. That takes us to item 5, special presentations. And we do have one this evening, and I would like to invite Elizabeth Steinberg to meet me at the podium.
And I'm not Biz Steinberg. I'm Ray Fleming. Biz couldn't join us this evening, and I'm the Director of Health Services, and I am representing EOC tonight.
My apologies.
That's all right.
There's a resemblance.
There is? All right. That's wonderful.
Give Biz our best.
I will.
It is my honor to present a proclamation this evening congratulating the EOC, the Economic Opportunities Commission, on its 40th anniversary. And I'm going to read just a few paragraphs of the proclamation. Whereas the Economic Opportunity Commission of San Luis Obispo County incorporated community-based programs and actions. And whereas the Economic Opportunities Commission is directly responsible for service planning and delivery of community programs, including early Head Start, Head Start, migrant and seasonal Head Start, state migrant child care, state preschool, state general child care resource connection, energy conservation, weatherization services, health services including clinical health education and youth development programs, emergency services, homeless shelter and support services, adult day services, and parent education and child abuse prevention services. You guys are really busy. And whereas the Economic Opportunities Commission is an independent organization annually serving 35,000 low-income persons by working in partnership with volunteers, county government, city government, the private sector, and low-income populations throughout San Luis Obispo County, Now therefore be it resolved that I, Tony Ferrara, Mayor of the City of Arroyo Grande, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby acknowledge and congratulate the Economic Opportunities Commission on its 40th anniversary, and it's my pleasure to present this to you on behalf of the city.
Thank you very much.
And we would invite you to say a few words, if you would.
My name is Ray Fleming, and I live at 229 Short Street, Arroyo Grande. And I want to thank the council for your participation in our Board of Commissioners. It's an important commitment that you've made, and we greatly appreciate it. I also want to thank you for this proclamation tonight on behalf of Biz Steinberg, who is our Chief Executive Officer, our Board of Commissioners, the staff, and all of the clients of EOC. Support from your council has allowed our program to provide the services that were listed in here tonight. And so we thank you for helping the residents of this community and San Luis Obispo County move towards self-sufficiency. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here. That takes us to item 6, agenda review. Move that all resolutions and ordinances presented tonight be read in title only, and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Please address the council as a whole. Anyone who would like to come forward, items not on this evening's agenda. If you would state your name, please, for the record.
Sure. Mike McConville, 529 East Branch Street. Members of the City Council. We've noticed a little bit of increase in traffic down 227 coming into town here, and we've noticed the truck noise a little bit more these days. They seem to be using their air brake, and if you've ever heard one of those, it can raise the hair on the back of your neck. But it would be nice if someone would look into that problem. It goes through the whole house, the noise. Instead of using the brakes, they use the air brakes. So if somebody from the city could take it upon themselves to look at it a little bit more. We've seen other cities that have implemented a sign saying no use of air brake coming into town, especially where there's a grade and the trucks use it quite frequently. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Did we get a note on that, Steve?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Hi, Susan Flores, 529 East Branch. I just wanted to make a comment with the EOC here. This evening, I work at Rory Grande Community School, and I would just like to acknowledge the many, many services that they're providing for not only our kids at our school, but their families. We are utilizing, our families are utilizing the Head Start program. We are using their medical clinics for our youth. We use the Garden Project. We have sex education, which comes in through these services for our young youth. And I know there's many other services, food programs and such that they help coordinate, and I just really appreciate the fact that the city has acknowledged and given them this proclamation because it is very well deserved. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Randy Spinneman. I'm a teacher at Arroyo Grande High School, and I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the council for allowing my students to come to your council meetings. We use the council meetings quite a bit for at least 4 to 7, 8 weeks a year. Go home and they see it on TV. And they're coming back now constantly asking questions. And I think that's what it's all about. And I'd like to thank you guys for allowing that opportunity to take place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. By the way, we do appreciate having the students here, and we're also appreciative of the honor system, because I can recall several years ago when the students would come, they would have to march up here and have us sign a verification that they were actually here. So now you take their word for it. So
I
There you go. Okay. Anyone else? Public comment. Okay. Then we will close community comments and suggestions. We'll move to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is a group of items that the council normally approves in one action, unless there is an individual item that any member of the council would like to pull for discussion, clarification, or separate vote. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on consent items. And I would invite you to do so at this time. If there are members of the audience would like to come forward and comment on consent items 8A through 8D, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we will close public comment on the consent agenda, and we'll bring this back to the council. And, gentlemen, what is your will? Are there individual items we would like to take a closer look at?
Well, it's my understanding that the city manager would like to have item 8D pulled.
Right. Are there any others? Okay, then, Steve, would you go ahead with 8D?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Actually, I'd like to have Don Spagnola, our Director of Public Works, give a brief presentation. We asked this item to be pulled because there's been some changes, and we're actually modifying the staff recommendation on this item.
Thank you, Steve. good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members. This evening, I'd just like to give you a brief overview of some of the changes that have happened just recently, and have a full presentation to the council a little bit later when we're further along in preparing the PA&ED. We do have a project study report and project development support document that we have approved already. We are in the process, as you know, of preparing the PA&ED. The others have various components at Briscoe and also on East Grand at the on and off ramps. But what's important here, that what the thing I want to talk about mostly is this auxiliary lane component. Caltrans and SLOCOG are in the process of doing some operational improvements on the 101 in our area. And part of those improvements include auxiliary lanes. And some of those coincide with what we're doing, especially these northbound lanes between Grand and Briscoe and between Briscoe and Camino Mercado. So the idea was to include those in our PA&ED so that we can move forward as a joint project. That was the original thinking. We want to take those out. This is something we discussed recently, that SLOCOG is recommending that those be taken out now because they can move forward with a funding source, because that particular part of the operational improvements has an approved project study report. Therefore, they're able to fund not only the next phase, which is PA&ED for that, but also design and construction. So that was a change that we talked about recently, just after the staff report was prepared for the council. Some of the funding issues that we've talked about recently, SLOCOG has an upcoming funding cycle that we thought we could somehow apply for. There's a potential for reprogramming of funds that are no longer viable, so SLOCOG potentially has some extra funds that we might be able to apply to our Briscoe project. And the other issue was, as we talked about, the inclusion of the projects in the STIP, that funding for future project components require an approved PSR, which is where the auxiliary lanes are. They have that approved funding. They have that approved project report. We have an approved project report, but it's also a project development support document, which doesn't have the full impact of the project study report. Mainly the funding part of it, where you can fund out future steps. So the background on the recommendations that we have in the staff report, as I mentioned earlier, the main idea was to try to execute a contract amendment to proceed with the PA and ED, the extra environmental issues that we have to do for Caltrans for that. But what I'd like to do is reduce the allocation because we're not doing that first part. We can reduce the allocation down to $88,000 from $139,000. The last thing I just want to mention about this is that we do have some funding strategies. As I mentioned, the auxiliary lanes are going to be going forward, and they're out there in 2010-2011. The remainder of the project, which is what I talked about, the structure at Briscoe, if there are structures there, and then the improvements at Grand and the off-ramps, those will put into the next funding cycle because we'll have our PA and ED hopefully approved by then, and that'll be for 2011 and 12. And then we're also pursuing strategies to upfront the funds to try to construct it a little earlier than that. The last thing here on this slide is that the city is also developing strategies for local match funds, and we're doing that through the sales tax proposal. So that's one of the strategies that we have to try to address the Briscoe project. So with that, Mr. Mayor, I'll conclude my remarks and then be available to answer any questions you may have.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, Don. First of all, I want to thank you guys for continuing the fight. And you know, I think, as the rest of the council knows, this has been ongoing for many years, and we had hoped for, a more rapid outcome, and it's not happening. one thing that, before I forget, Don, what I had asked Don and Steve to do, particularly for those of you who don't have the history on this project, but I thought it would be beneficial if we could all get grounded, maybe bring back some of the history of this project, look at the alternatives, some of the designs, what this project entails in terms of individual work elements and essentially the scope of it, the different components and how they're supposed to work together. And particularly some of the changes on the alignments that Caltrans is having an issue with on Briscoe, or I should say on the development of a PSR, which according to the slow cog presentation is 2 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario, you look at a PA and ED, which is another 3 to 5 years. And so on and so forth. You're looking at, these days, for a project of this magnitude, you're looking at a 10-year planning cycle before one shovel full of dirt can be turned. Mm-hmm. So I think it would be beneficial for our public to see a picture of that. And there was one other issue that Oh, I know. The question I had for you in your meeting with Caltrans, I remember it was probably about a year, maybe 2 years ago, when could have been at least 2 years ago, when Caltrans gave us a very in-depth presentation. They had a model here that they ran for us on their operational improvements for South County for the South 101 corridor. I thought for certain that those aux lanes were part of their PSR. Were they not?
Yes.
Okay. Was it their plan from a funding standpoint to include those aux lanes in their own PA and ED?
I believe so, yes.
Okay. That's where I'm a little fuzzy now. Now, do they want us to make those inclusions? And if so, who pays the extra money?
Well, I can give it a shot, and then you can add, Steve. I think one of the ideas was to move those aux lanes along, include them with our project. So, since we're going ahead with the PADD, and since they're adjacent to the construction that we're going to do, why not include them and construct it all as one, project? And I think that was the idea And that's why they broke it out. You know, Steve, did you have something else you wanted to?
I was going to say the fact that the PSR is completed is what allows us to go ahead and request some funding. Our PANED has shown that to do the interchange project requires the auxiliary lanes at the same time. So what we're talking about is with the PSR that's in place for the auxiliary lanes, proceeding to request funding for that portion of the project. And as part of that, what we've requested them to do is pull those two lanes out of those auxiliary lanes, that the auxiliary lane portion of that would be entirely paid for by the state.
So Caltrans would essentially contribute to the PANED as relates to the aux lanes?
Yeah, they're actually funding that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other questions?
Mr. Mayor. Steve, just to clarify, it sounds like from what Don just presented and what you just clarified is really what we're doing is we're taking the auxiliary lanes that Caltrans is proposing, pulling them out of our PANED. Is that correct? But they're going to be on parallel tracks, and yet they won't be part of the same PANED.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing because they were part of, I mean, they were part of their own PSR and PANED, and then we were told we had included in ours, and now we're pulling it back out again for the funding purposes so that can proceed to get funding programmed at least for that portion of the project.
My question is how does that affect funding for us? In other words, if we link the two, we have a program that Caltrans is looking at by... this is their way, from my understanding, of offsetting the need to build out Highway 101 to six lanes. So they're in the process of looking at those pinch points and providing auxiliary lanes. And that's on its own track, in a sense. And yet, part of what we're doing with our Briscoe-Halcyon improvement plan would actually... would be necessary or would it be enhanced by those auxiliary lanes. So we have this dovetail. So I guess my feeling is this. We need to work out whatever's going to be best, if at all possible, for the city of Arroyo Grande. Caltrans is moving forward on their funding cycle. And I want to make sure that we don't get lost in that funding cycle. And if we need to connect those two so that we can dovetail on their funding, then that's what we need to do. So I guess that my question to you is that still possible when we take these two components and run them parallel? Would it not be better to bring them back in, or is that even a possibility, and have them all done within the same PANED and then blend those together so that we can actually be on the shirt tail of Caltrans's project, which I have a sneaking suspicion will probably get higher marks down at the slow cog funding.
Wouldn't approve, so it got held up. Because there's a certified EIR for the auxiliary lanes, we can proceed at this time and at least get funding within the cycle. But as we proceed and as our PANED catches up, then we want to merge the two. I think the key to doing what you're saying is the fact that I believe we've got their commitment to pull out the two auxiliary lanes that relate to the Briscoe-Halcyon project. What we don't want is just getting lumped in with this auxiliary lane project that includes improvements all throughout the corridor.
Sure.
And so they've agreed to that. And but what you're saying is exactly what our strategy is we'll merge the two at some point. The auxiliary lanes will be considered a first phase of an overall project that addresses all the issues at the Briscoe interchange.
So one last question then. What we're approving this evening is, are we looking at then moving forward with our PANED on the Briscoe-Halcyon project, or are we looking at doing a supplemental? Because it's my understanding that we already approved a PANED probably close to a year ago. At least approve the process. Is that not correct?
Yeah, the PANED is underway. They've identified some additional issues in the environmental review that's going to require this additional expense.
This is a supplemental then?
No, this is additional. It's expanding the scope of the PA&ED. Now, we originally were going to recommend the supplemental PSR, and the reason for that was we were going to try to take out the problems that were causing an issue with Caltrans and see if we could get approved right away so we could apply for money. But it turned out there were some additional issues beyond what we had been aware of, so it was going to take too long for Caltrans to process it. So it's not worth spending the money. It would essentially be a waste of money.
Are there any other council comments on 8D? Okay, if not, then I'll entertain a motion with the understanding that the first recommendation in the staff report is now no longer desirable, and that the third allocation, or the third recommendation, the allocation of $139,250 has been reduced. Okay, and I'm sorry, I was distracted. Did your motion cover the allocation of funding?
Yeah, okay. The reduced allocation of the...
Okay. Item. We have a motion then. Is there a second?
I'll second the motion with discussion.
Okay.
I would also like to amend the motion. I think the mayor has made a nice remark in regards to maybe getting us coming back to the council with an update on the process. So not only we as council can refresh what's going on with this, I think, valuable project, but also that we can kind of keep the public up to date as to what we're not only attempting to do, but also the hurdles that we're facing as we try to rectify some of our circulation issues around the Briscoe Halcyon area. So if that's okay with the motion maker.
Okay. All right, we've expanded the motion, I guess, and second holds. any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes, thank you. Are we having any success out there, Dan? It's coming through the Village PA system. Okay. Yeah. Now that we've taken care of 8D, is there a motion to approve consent items 8A, B, and C?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Excuse me. Steve, is that part of a program tonight that you're aware of?
I'm not aware.
And?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Dan gives his report. I'll see what I can find out.
See if we can. We're trying to do something with that PA system out there, Terry. What code regarding community tree program?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. We have come back again after our October 25th meeting to further revise conditions and address concerns of the city council with regards to specific language within the ordinance. Based on discussion from our last meeting, what was decided by the council was to remove within the general definitions of tree in section 12.16.020, increase the size of regulated trees from 6 inches to 12 inches in diameter when measured 6 inches from the base, clarify the references in the ordinance to oak trees to be defined as coastal live oaks or Quercus agrifolia, and include a permit exemption for trees constituting an immediate fire hazard. The language that has been included within the code to address that was after sitting down and meeting with Chief Terry Fiebig out of the fire code. So what we've included with regards to that specific language is located in under definitions so I can find it real quick. Imminent fire safety hazard means trees that impinge upon the fire defensible zone around structures as determined by the Director of Building and Fire. The defensible zone is defined as the area 100 feet around a structure or 200 feet if structure is situated on or above a slope. And then getting into the exceptions, which is in the final section 12.16070G, exceptions 5, trees that present an immediate fire safety hazard as determined in writing by the Director of Building and Fire. So that was language that we worked on to hope that that addresses the council concerns. One other area that the council may wish to consider when making their motion, it was decided upon in on the September 27th meeting to include some kind of internal policy language to notify the Tree Guild of pending appeals for removal. So if it is the City Council's wishes when they are making a motion on the ordinance tonight to include something along those lines so that staff can make those changes within our internal policies for the Parks and Recreation Commission.
Okay, well, that's certainly something that I would want to see. And we were, I guess we discussed this last meeting, that because the Tree Guild was not an official commission or committee of the city, but it would not be appropriate for them to, for that language to be in the ordinance. But certainly it would be appropriate for staff to include that in policy. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We
which we'll do.
Okay.
I'm a little mixed up here or confused. Does that include residential now, or did we do away with the residential? Is it just commercial, or is it residential? Thank you.
We're still discussing regulating oak trees in the residential areas.
And street trees.
Oak trees. Oak trees only. Any other?
Additional clarification, that doesn't include street trees in the residential.
Street trees in residential.
Okay.
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. Since the last meeting, I took it upon myself to talk to a few of my neighbors and some of the people that I deal with on a daily basis in the business that I'm in regarding the tree ordinance. Almost everybody I've talked to was in favor of trees, especially in the right-of-way being protected, landmark-type trees being protected. Nobody I talked to felt that it was anything to do with the city's business what they did with their landscaping in their backyards. When I asked them, well, what if you had a big oak tree back there? I said, well, if we felt like we needed to take it out to do some change our yard, that we felt like they felt like that should be their option. Got a lot of mixed comments on what should be done in front yards. Some people said, well, that's my property too. Others understood that that would present more of a neighborhood issue. Also, I got comments from people talking about the trees in the existing streetscapes throughout the city that are rumpling up the sidewalks, and wondered if those were going to be taken care of as part of the tree ordinance. I just thought I'd share those comments that I've gotten from different people in the community. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9A and bring this back. Councilmember Arnold, now you can make a comment.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. After last meeting, I took it upon myself to drive around and look at what a 12-inch tree looks like, because I was a little concerned that we were arbitrarily grabbing numbers and we weren't really sure what that meant. And so I looked at a lot of trees, and I do think that the 12-inch tree is actually the appropriate size. That is a sizable oak tree. What I possibly had was maybe 18 inches on any two trunks. It was just a way to possibly protect the larger trees still. But other than that, I like what has been done with the fire option here. I think the wording has been changed to meet everybody's needs. We all talk to different people. I know that everybody I've talked to is very enthusiastic about protecting the oak trees. So I just don't see this as an ordinance that is going to be that restrictive. If someone really comes in and wants to take out a tree, at least if the neighbors were notified. I just see a lot of these oak trees where they do cross over property lines and stuff, and the problem that I have with if we're not protecting them is that once they're gone, they're gone. And we really are talking about things that have lasted, been around for a very long time. And so I think we have hit upon a good number at the 12 inches. I think it really will be protecting the trees that we're talking about. And I'm going to have no problem supporting this ordinance. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
I just did have one quick clarification on the language in the eminent fire zone. In the end, if it's within 100 feet or in 200 feet in some areas, the decision is still made by the fire chief. It's not just because in the 100 feet you can do whatever you want. I wanted to be sure.
Yes, it is.
Totally clear there. I too have talked to a number of people about this and gotten very mixed opinions. Certainly people are uncomfortable with the city regulating things in their backyard. But I think when I reviewed with people and explained Councilman Arnold was saying that in fact this is just makes a discretionary process. Yes, it could be abusive, just like any process could be, but there's no real reason to believe that it would be. We've added language here that allows for a quicker decision process where we have any kind of a fire danger. I think we also all know what it means when a branch falls off a tree and you have to go out and trim it, that's an immediate danger. So I don't have any trouble going forward with this for the exact same reasons I said before. We do in our general plan say we're going to protect oak trees, and just protecting them in development is not the only way to go, that in fact we should be protecting them throughout the city. I'm not quite as attached to that part as I am, particularly to the street tree portion of this, where I do think, in fact, the public area on the street really does need to be protected.
I believe some areas that really certainly needed to be strengthened. And so, you know, approximately 6 months ago or so, we asked staff to do that, and that's exactly what they did. And in doing so, I think they've really done a great job of putting together a document that helps us put together an ordinance that clarifies the issues and I think strengthens what we've had in the past. I think that from my difficulty with this has been where do we draw the line and where do we then say what is the importance items that need to be part of our tree ordinance to really magnify the issue of protecting trees within our city, and what areas that we probably should leave up to the private property owners. And so that's been my issue, and I think that what we've done here is we've done a good job, but we're moving in an area that I think I personally feel uncomfortable with. And I think that when we talk about protecting the coastal live oak on property and single-family residential areas, I have to look back and say, why are we doing that? What is the problem? And the only issue that I've seen thus far is that when we have a particular development proposal that comes before us, and it seems to be more times than not that individual wants to put a bigger home, more structure, whatever, on that property, which means that they're requesting to eliminate some of the foliage and possibly even trees on that property. And that has been a struggle for us because we really can't regulate that. We can certainly have discretion in regards to their development proposal and make suggestions as to where we believe the building site should be and modify it. But I really think that we're talking about, if we move forward with this ordinance as it's written, there'll be unintended consequences. And those unintended consequences are with those property owners that certainly want to maybe do some things in their backyard, or at least have some resentment to the fact that the city is indeed requesting that they have to come down and ask permission to modify an oak tree in their backyard. And I think that's really not what we're trying to do. So from my perspective, I'm in full agreement with this particular ordinance as written, but I cannot support the item when we talk about regulated trees in Winwin Hills, but I don't believe that this is the right way to do it. So without the language that I referred to earlier being stricken, I cannot support this ordinance, unfortunately, as proposed. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. Excuse me. And just tickle and it just won't go away. A couple of observations with regard to the size of the regulated tree, and I was listening to all of the comments and some good ideas. My thoughts are that I was listening to Councilmember Arnold discuss the potential for a multi-trunk situation. I'm thinking at this point, since this is a, what this does is begin a discretionary process in the kinds of issues that we're talking about, 12 inches or greater, which means I assume that when someone comes in with a request, a permit, if you will, that does the process include some form of inspection before the permit is granted? Then the discretionary part of it is on site. When you're there, you make a judgment call based on what you see. Does it fit more or less the parameters of the ordinance? Is that correct?
That's correct. And should there be disagreement, they have the option of appealing to the Parks and Recreation Commission and consequently to the council if they disagree with staff's opinion.
And that is essentially the process that's in place from other cities that have used this type of an approach, particularly with single-family residents.
That's correct.
Okay. you know, that being said, and I can certainly understand the hesitancy, if you will, that Councilmember Dickens has. I'm thinking at this point that I can support this ordinance as it's written now. I applaud you, Dan, and folks who have worked on the modifications and making sure that the language is probably about the best we can make it in terms of clarifying some of the definitions. But in deference to what Councilmember Dickens was saying, my thoughts are that if we approve this, put it into practice, monitor it. we'll see if there have been any significant issues or problems. And if so, then bring it back. In fact, bring it back anyway and check in just as an information item. And since these are concerns. And that's not inconsistent with the way that we've handled, I think, some of these more controversial issues. We give it a shot. We take our best effort at giving things a shot. And if it turns out that they're not working, then not be afraid to modify them. So that would be my recommendation. And then, as I indicated before, the policy, internal policy issue with regard to the Tree Guild and making sure that they've got a voice in the process here. Those are my comments. Anything else, gentlemen?
Mr. Mayor, I had one other question I guess I'd like to ask of the council. Is one of the things we're talking about in here is if tree trimmers or landscapers were to violate this ordinance, there are some penalties. And so I was wondering how the council would feel if we asked staff to notify any landscapers or tree trimming companies with business permits on file, or anyone in the phone book. I think that would just, it wouldn't be that expensive, and I think we could possibly alleviate some headaches also.
Sure. Absolutely. I would support that. how about any other comments on that? Okay. Okay, anything else from any council member on this? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending portions of Chapter 12.16 of Title 12 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding the Community Tree Program, with the understanding also that the city will notify all landscape and tree trimming companies that have business permits with the city or that are also located in the phone book.
And could I ask a favor in your motion? If you could include a check-in after a one-year period?
Yes, and we could add the check-in after 1 year also.
I'll second that motion.
Just as a matter of clarification, we'll be notifying them regarding tree removals.
We'll be notifying them of
that way they have the full text of the ordinance. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie? Councilmember Dickens?
No.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. That takes us to item 9B, consideration of a resolution ordering formation of the Parkside Village Assessment District, confirming assessments, district diagram, and approving the levying of assessments.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Members of the council, on July 22nd of this year, Parkside Village LLC, the sole owner of the affected property, pursuant to Streets and Highways Code Section 22,500 at SEC, which is the Landscaping and Lighting Act of 1972, submitted a petition to the city requesting formation of an assessment district to maintain certain improvements associated with Track 2310. On July 26th of this year, the council adopted a resolution initiating proceedings for formation of that district. On September 13th of this year, the council adopted a resolution of intention to form the district and levy assessments. And at that time, it considered and approved an engineer's report, which contained the assessment role and assessment diagram, the assessment formula, and other critical data associated with the district. Tonight, we're in the last step of formation of that district, which is a public hearing, at which time you consider actual formation of the district and the levy of assessments. We provided notice to Parkside Village LLC, still the sole property owner involved in this formation, which included an assessment ballot. The ballot was returned with an affirmative vote. The property owner has the right to withdraw that vote until the time the public hearing is closed. Assuming that's not done, the council will then proceed to consider adoption of a resolution which will form the district, which will also adopt the assessment diagram, the assessment role, and levy assessments, and that material would be forwarded to the county, to the to the auditor's office, and to the recorder's office for processing. That's where we are tonight. Again, we're here to open a public hearing and to allow the property owner an opportunity to withdraw their affirmative vote for creation of the district. I noticed that there is a representative of S&S Homes who seems very anxious to consider withdrawal. So with that, we just recommend the council open the public hearing, take whatever testimony from any member of the public that's interested in the matter, and track 2310, 1 and 2. If they're a portion of 2310, 1 or 2, then they are included within this district.
Are you talking about the existing homes in Parkside Manor?
Which, at least on this map, are not included in this drawing. So they're not included. No. Now, so is there another assessment district?
Are you talking about the existing homes along Oak Park?
Yes. And, you know, there's a little street that comes
in. It's not related to this district. I believe there's a separate district over there, and that includes the maintenance of the landscaping along the sidewalk on Oak Park as well as the medians on Oak Park.
I think at one time they were talking about combining these to be one single assessment district.
Because we're right there, the districts are designed to maintain different things, it got too complicated, and it works out much better having separate districts.
Yeah, equity issue, I think. Any other comments in the staff report? Questions? Clarifications?
I just had one typo throughout the resolution, if I could just bring to your attention. And it's only I caught this only because it's a personal issue. Every time that in the resolution, or actually it's in a couple places, that it identifies the location of this particular site, it talks about located on Farrell Road at Dixon Street. The road was actually, Dixon Street was named after my grandfather, and it's spelled wrong. According to the map, it's D-I-X-S-O-N. So I just wanted to point that out.
We'll make that correction, and I do apologize.
Okay.
Okay, any other corrections, clarifications? Any other council member would like a street named after them, maybe? Can we make that happen? Okay, this is a public hearing, and any member of the public who would like to come forward and comment on 9B, this would be an opportunity. I guess we're not going to get an affirmative vote withdrawn then, okay? Then we'll close public hearing portion of 9B and bring this back for action. Who would like to go first? Councilmember Dickens? With a correction?
With a correction, sure. No, I think this is certainly appropriate. When we approved this tentative track map, I believe, way back when, this was the idea to put together this assessment. That was one of the ways of identifying some of the public improvements within the area. So I think this is exactly what we were looking for, and I have no...
I'll move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande ordering formation of Parkside Village Assessment District, confirming assessments, assessment district diagram, and approving the levying of assessments.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. Takes us to 9C. Consideration of an interim urgency ordinance, City Council, regarding development adjacent to the creeks and creek tributaries.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council members. Tonight's proposal is in relation to the September 27th public hearing at which the council adopted ordinance number 572, which is an interim urgency ordinance suspending acceptance and processing of applications for development of property immediately adjacent to Arroyo Grande Creek, Tally Hill Creek, Meadow Creek, or creek tributaries within the city of Arroyo Grande. Excuse me. Pursuant to Government Code Section 65858A, the initial interim urgency ordinance is effective for 45 days, ending November 11th, and may be extended for 10 months and 15 days, subject to specified notice and public hearing requirements. And that's why we're here this evening. We are recommending tonight that the City Council adopt the attached interim urgency ordinance to extend the suspension of acceptance and processing of new applications for development of these creek properties within the city. And this is to allow staff time to continue to study the impacts created by development adjacent to creeks and to formulate procedures and protections to minimize such impacts. In your packet is a preliminary work plan. Staff did bring this work plan to the Planning Commission on October 18th, and the commissioners discussed some concerns and gave some feedback to staff. Primarily, the commissioners wanted to make sure that we provided for ample public input during the creek study. And the work plan is essentially divided into three parts. We're looking at definitions, appropriate mechanisms.
To your report, Teresa, if I could... just for the information of the council, today we had a status report, a progress report that Zone 11A Task Force and Advisory Committee presented to the Board of Supervisors. And as we have discussed previously, one of the key issues is the way in which the City of Arroyo Grande and the County of San Luis Obispo will address doing a better job of managing the upper watershed. Because of the downstream impacts on Zone 11A. So I gave a copy of this staff report to the members of the Board of Supervisors so that they would understand that what we had already done and what we were going to be discussing tonight related to our responsibility for the upper watershed. So this is part and parcel of a much larger effort that's taken place attendant to the Zone 11A issues. any questions, comments on 9C?
I may have missed it, but what do you guys look at the time frame? Is it the 11 months or 10 days, or do you think it's going to take?
Well, we're requesting the full amount for the allowable by the government code, 10 months and 15 days. Staff is optimistic that we can achieve steady results prior to that. We did have a preliminary schedule that included bringing forward alternatives in March.
And it should be noted, if that's not sufficient time, there is one additional one-year extension permitted under 65858.
Teresa, I did have a question. I had a conversation with a gentleman who may have a project at the Arroyo Grande Hospital extension, which is very close to the creek, and we discussed this particular issue. And I guess my question is if in this interim period, while we're making those studies, a project comes forth like that one, for example, that is beyond the setback, and they come up with a strategy to completely mitigate on site as opposed to having any drainage impact into the creek, how would we treat those projects while the study was underway? In other words, if they made a determination that
after the September 27th date, are not able to bring forward a project or a portion of a project characteristic that would affect the creek. If it can be shown and incorporated in the project description that there is no effect to the creek or in the area 25 feet from the top of bank or edge of riparian vegetation, whichever is greater, then they could proceed with the application.
Okay.
That particular project, I don't think actually involves any actual construction within the setback, so we don't think that one would be impacted.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? No? Okay. This is a public hearing. Any member of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9C, this would be an opportunity.
Steve Ross, 211 Garden Street. I'm a little confused now with this ordinance. As I understood it, we were prohibiting development of any properties that bordered any of the creeks or their tributaries as they inside the city limits. Now are we saying we're only going to eliminate projects that would have something that was built within the 25-foot setback? Does that mean that if there a project comes forward that is on the creek that does not propose to build anything within the 25-foot setback and that would not contribute to runoff being put into the creek, then would not be affected by this ordinance and, in fact, would be able to proceed with development? That would be my question.
I'd offer two comments. One, the urgency ordinance specifically exempted projects in process, and there are about a half dozen projects of substantial magnitude that were filed and in process prior to the urgency ordinance being established. As examples, Track 01001, also known as 1998, Cherry Creek, adjoining Arroyo Grande, considered new applications. Obviously, we are trying to preclude so that we can develop a more comprehensive policy. I think with that explanation, I can understand some confusion, but it was called out in the initial hearings on the urgency ordinance that this affected new developments. There are some minor new developments on Whiteley. There's a single-family house adjoining a creek. Those types of projects which are already on file and under consideration are not precluded and will be decided on a case-by-case basis.
And on those case-by-case bases for those projects that are already in the queue, so to speak, we have discretion in terms of evaluating impacts on the creeks for drainage purposes and siltation and riparian issues and all of those.
Absolutely.
Okay. Any other members of the public that would like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9C. Councilmember Dickens, why don't you start this one for us,
Mayor? Yeah, I think that this was certainly an ordinance that I supported to begin with. I think that our goal is to give us an opportunity to make some clarifications and to align our policies throughout our general plan, both from development policies and our land use policies and our conservation policies, so that there certainly isn't the confusion that we're having. We have some elements that are, I think, in the public's best interest, and yet when they're put together in a project form and come before us, I think there's some competing problems. I also believe that this gives us the opportunity to address development adjacent to our waterways in respect to our sediment and any kind of impacts that we might be having downstream, to certainly assist and do our part in regards to the Zone 1-1A issues that are happening and the sediment that is certainly coming upstream into that particular area. So I really believe this is important for us. I believe we have the flexibility in regards to the questions that have been brought forth with encroach upon these particular areas of concern, then that they're more than welcome to move forward. But the areas of concern are let's see if I can do this quickly, basically erosion, alteration of creek banks, riparian habitat protection, rapid sedimentation, recreation and trail dedication, enforcement of provisions of dedicated creek easements, measurement of top of creek bank, non-conforming structures on creek banks, and feasibility of development on non-conforming and or antiquated lots that include creeks and riparian habitat. Those are the areas that we're trying to address and create some consistency, and I'm hopeful and certainly have confidence in our staff to address these issues within the time frame that's been allowed. So I continue to support this ordinance, and I think it allows us the flexibility and the clarifications that's needed in order to provide a consistency throughout our general plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, I think when we saw this ordinance initially, we all kind of recognized that we were going to be extending it. I do like what has been tentatively proposed for the preliminary work plan. I think they're broad enough issues that we should be able to truly understand why we're going to have a policy protecting the creeks when this whole ordinance is done. So I have no problem with extending the ordinance right now. I would also like to read us out of the actual ordinance, the section one, where it discusses what is being basically suspended, and it says shall create a moratorium on acceptance of processing of building or grading permits or new land use applications which seek to improve or develop property within 25 feet of top of creek bank or edge of riparian vegetation, whichever is greater, and then it lists all the creeks that are impacted. So if the products are outside of that area, they are not impacted. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Guthrie.
Yeah, I do have no problem with moving forward here. This is just addressing some of the complications of implementing the general plan, and I think it's a reasonable period of time to, you know, to deal with those problems that have come up. Thanks.
Okay. Assuming that we're not going to have an issue with the vote on this, I just want to take this opportunity to thank staff for putting this together, and I think on behalf of the Zone 1-1A Task Force, which is becoming my other to supervisors and County Public Works, along with our Public Works and myself and Steve and I think Rob, you were in on that as well. I can't remember if you were there, Teresa, were you? Okay. At any rate, as we address some of these issues in the work plan, I would like to somehow integrate that we include and continue to work with the county, particularly on some of the creek systems that that are critical and crucial that are outside the city boundaries, but we certainly feel the effects of it. The upper watershed extends, as we have defined it, all the way to Lopez Dam. And then there are other tributaries like Newsom Springs that cause us all kinds of problems. So those are things that I would want to include in the scope of work for the work plan that we continue to work side by side with the county, and to the degree that we need to continue to encourage that, check back in with us if things aren't working well, and we can certainly meet with our supervisors and make sure that that happens. That would be my only addition to the work plan. Okay, with that, I will, if there's no other comments, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll propose approval of an interim urgency ordinance of the City Council of the City of Aurora Grande to extend the suspension of acceptance and processing of new applications for development of any portion of the property immediately adjacent to Aurora Grande Creek, Tally Ho Creek, Meadow Creek, or creek tributaries within the City of Aurora Grande.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes, thank you. We'll take us to item 9D, our final public hearing. Consideration of proposed ordinance amending Title 13 of the City of Aurora Grande Municipal Code relating to water and sewer service.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And in this chapter, we've involved our public works supervisors and staff to try to get as much input as we could into making the changes that are appropriate for our operation, today's operation. But the majority of the changes occurred in the water system chapter. You know, over the years, we've added things here and there, and as issues came up, we'd add a new section. So what we decided to do was to take a look and group some of the issues that come up most often, like rates and charges, also permits, as well as any kind of unlawful acts, and what is the penalties for those things. So what we did was, in the water part of it specifically, we took a look at kind of grouping all that stuff together so that we could make this thing a little more readable. One of the other things that was important, previously we had the fees and the water rates were also part of the this chapter. And what we've done, we've taken that out previously when we've approved the water and sewer rate structures. So we took those charges out of this code. Makes it easier to make revisions, and I think those are something that we can change by resolution of the council at some later date as things change. As I mentioned, the water part of it was pretty much the bulk of the changes that we had to make. Some of the other things I just want to walk through briefly to give you an idea of some of the issues that have come up that we've addressed with this revision and update. I talked about Chapter 1304, which is a water system. Chapter 1305 is water conservation, and 1306 is the mandatory retrofit program. You know, these were recently approved by the council, and so there was only just minor changes. But I think the most significant thing was to better clarify that the mandatory measures are intended for urgent water shortages situations where the voluntary measures were insufficient to address the shortage. And, of course, this is all something that's going to be at the discretion of the council as to when to implement those. The next section was 1308, and that was dealing with water wells. Here we just had some clarification on the definition. We've always gone to them up previously, and I'm sure we'll come up in the future. But it gives the council the ultimate say as to the approval of new wells. Chapter 1312, which is the sewer service system. Again, we made some corrections to the definitions. We updated how we go about constructing things and maintaining things. We took out some of the old standards, and we also took out conflicts between the Uniform Plumbing Code and what we were specifying in the old code. So we actually deleted some sections because they're actually covered in the Uniform Plumbing Code. So hopefully that'll be clearer for those who come to the counter for applications and things for our sewer system. Next was the Chapter 1316, which is cross connections. Primarily, the county addresses our cross connection issues with the maintenance and testing of our backflow devices. And here we just eliminated some fees that we note that no longer apply. Chapter 1320, which is construction regulations and standards, we completely repealed this section. The city standards and specifications, primarily the standards, are addressed in the city standards that the council approves from time to time. That's a separate document that that we update from time to time. But it also removes some of the conflicts with the state and federal specifications for construction regulations. The Chapter 1324, which is excavation and grading, erosion and sediment control, we actually didn't have any for this one. It's the only one we didn't have any changes for because we just approved that in 2003. So it had all of the erosion control, sediment control, grading issues that we've been dealing with over the years have all been updated to today's standards. Lastly, Chapter 1326. This is a section that we added, and it deals with encroachment permits. You know, in the past, encroachment permits were issued by the Public Works Department, approved by the Public Works Director. And with the increase in the volume of requests for encroachment permits, primarily from utilities, with the installation of underground conduits for encroachment permit ordinance to them, and then that way they have ability to know exactly what their requirements are going to be. So this is kind of a thing that kind of clarifies what the issues are going to be, the permit process, those sorts of things, for anybody who's interested in doing work in the city and the public right away. The remaining revisions were pretty much grammatical, some minor errors that needed to be cleared up, clerical in nature. And so I wanted to thank Kelly for helping us get through this this process. This is one of the major chapters, and it did take a while, but we finally got through it, and I think it's going to help us in the long run to clarify what exactly the public and contractors and everyone else who does business with the city needs to do, especially for public works. So with that, I'll conclude, Mr. Mayor, and be available for questions.
Okay. Any questions for Don?
I have one. It relates to some of the fees you were talking about. I'm on page 301, 13.4, and I'm looking at the service connection fees. And is that established here, if we wanted to change those fees in the future, would we have to reintroduce this entire?
No, and I think that's a perfect example of why we took those things out. We don't have to go back and amend the code, the ordinance, in the future if we decide to change those. That's all part of a resolution by the City Council that we can bring forward to you at some time to make changes.
I guess I'm a little confused because it is actually in here.
This, if you're looking on page 301, this is the old code. This is the existing current code. The new code is just the changes were...
just the last part? Okay.
Yeah. The changes are on at the end of the staff report. That's the ordinance that the issues we're going to amend.
That's where we had all the crossouts and where it actually showed what physically was changed. Okay.
Right.
I just read too far then. All right.
Okay, anything else? This is a public hearing. Any member of the audience would like to come forward on 9D, it would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we'll close the public hearing portion of 9D. Councilmember Guthrie?
Yeah, I don't have any issues. I do think this does, I did have concerns when you were going through that we had a number of costs that I thought were still included in here, and yet it does seem to
modern standards, and also alleviating any clarification issues that may have changed over time. So thank you, Don, for work well done.
Okay, thanks. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, can support this. I have nothing to add. I think Councilmember Dickens covered everything. Great job, Don. So thank you.
Okay. This is a very clean document, and I think it reads a lot better than what we had in place. So, again, I want to compliment you, Don, and also Kelly, for your contribution here as well. I'm sure there's going to be some reciprocation between administrative services and public works, right? So, in other words, you owe her.
I'm sure lunch will be involved.
Yeah, okay. All right. With that, I'll entertain a motion on 9D.
Mr. Mayor, I would move for approval of an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending Title 13, Public Works, related to water and sewer service provisions.
I'll second that.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. That takes us to item 10, continued business. We have none. 11 is new business. We have none. Item 12, city council member items. We have none. Item 13, city manager items. Anything tonight?
None.
Item 14, council communication. Okay, just a quick note for the benefit of those of you who did not attend, there was a Project 2050 meeting that Councilmember Arnold and Guthrie and myself attended at Grace Church last Saturday, I believe. It was well done. Some issues I had with the process, but beyond that, it was there was a lot of good information, and our staff was there as well, and we were well represented. And item 15, staff communications. Anything tonight, Steve?
Just wanted to remind the public and recognize the city clerk for our new process of having all the staff reports online. So this was the our maiden voyage as far as doing that, and worked pretty well so far.
Takes us to item 17, which is adjournment.
Move.
Okay, thank you.